It's time now for Green Visions, a KUMD production to encourage green thinking and green actions. Minnesota Power Energy Conservation Program makes Green Visions possible in part, making progress toward a lower carbon energy future. Well, we like green thinking. We like green actions. We're just not as excited about green or blue-green algal blooms. Most of the time, I guess, when I think about these blooms, I'm thinking about them on smaller lakes. But a team of researchers led by Bob Sterner, the director of the Large Lakes Observatory at UMD, has identified a couple of factors that contribute to these blooms on Lake Superior, and one of those factors is already in play. Bob Sterner joins us this morning on the phone. Good morning. Nice to have you with us, Bob. Thanks for being on the line with us.
Good morning. I'm glad to join you.
So let's talk about a couple of factors that can contribute to algae blooms. And you said we're already dealing with one of those factors. Can you tell us a little more?
Yeah, happy to, although it's not a pleasant topic, as you already pointed out. As far as we can understand, Lake Superior has begun to exhibit blue-green algae blooms, especially along the south shore between the Twin Ports and the Apostle Islands. We say that because there are no records we know of prior to 2012. But we don't have any data to definitely prove that these are a new thing. But in examining the record of what years these blooms appeared, especially in the two largest events, one in 2012 and one in 2018, it's quite clear that high seasonal warming, so not just a day or two that are warm, but when the lake warms up over the period of weeks, usually early, but it develops a relatively warm temperature kind of at the seasonal scale, this is when we tend to see these blooms, and they can be very unsightly to observers standing at the shoreline.
Well, there was just a story on the national news last week about warming in the Great Lakes, and they were showing all these people splashing happily at beaches outside of Chicago and in various locations, and it was like, whoa, it's warm, it's wonderful, it's warm. Yeah, until you get sick. If the warming is one of the factors, what is the second factor?
Well, we also suspect, this is largely circumstantial evidence at this point, but we suspect that extremely large rainfalls are involved in producing large blooms in Lake Superior. So I mentioned 2012 and 2018 already. Those were the two biggest bloom years. They were warm, but also what distinguishes them is there were historically large rainfalls. The 2012 one is the infamous one that tore out a lot of infrastructure in Duluth. And 2018, maybe not quite as in the front of people's thinking here in Duluth, but it was a similarly large rainfall along the in northern Wisconsin, along the Lake Superior shoreline that year. So from what we can tell now, and every year will be a new data point, I want to stress that. This is research. We're trying to work this out. But from what we understand now, the combination of a warm year coupled with, a historically large rainfall, something out of the ordinary, seems to be necessary in order to produce the really large blooms. And the 2018 bloom, by the way, the entire shoreline between the Twin Ports and the Apostle Islands was a deep, opaque green. It was really quite unsightly.
Ooh. Well, I mean, I like green, but perhaps not in the lake. I guess,
yeah.
I always thought that in order for these blooms to pop up, they had to occur on smaller lakes. I guess I just figured that Lake Superior was so big and the waves were so active that it would sort of smash apart any kind of algal bloom, which is why I'm not a scientist and why I like to ask scientists questions. But Go ahead. No, that was it.
That's a great observation. You're right. It is part of what's interesting to us about this, besides the fact that just Lake Superior is important and we have to understand this because we need to manage it. But it is interesting to see it in this kind of environment. It's not what you typically think of as a place that produces blue-green algae. It's not unheard of. In fact, there was a similar event, as far as we can tell, in Lake Baikal in Siberia a couple of years ago, which is not quite as large in area as Lake Superior is, but much deeper and much bigger in volume, and also typically cold and clear. And so Lake Superior isn't alone in being a large lake, typically low nutrient and clear water that exhibits this, but it's not the first place you typically think of.
Now, I know, of course, as a responsible dog person, that your animals can be sick. Dogs can get sick if they ingest this. Do people get sick, too? I'm guessing if it isn't good for dogs, it can't be really great for people.
Well, that's absolutely right. So what I want to say is our tests for toxicity so far in prior blooms have come up negative. So either toxins are below the limit of detection or they're at very low level. So we have not recorded an event that we know to be unhealthy for people or dogs. That said, if people observe a bloom in Lake Superior or anywhere, it's always a good idea to avoid skin contact, to not let your pets come in contact with it, because every year there are some deaths of dogs, and there are some illnesses that people can get from these blue-green algae. So I'm happy to do this interview in part because we're really dependent on the public to let us know what they see. So if you see a bloom in Lake Superior or anywhere, but I'm particularly interested in Lake Superior myself, if you see a bloom, you should report it to your local Department of Natural Resources. And the Wisconsin DNR is set up really well to do this. And since we're principally talking about the Wisconsin shoreline, they are the first group to reach out to. And they also have really helpful information about toxicity on their website.
So if folks are going to report it, I'm getting a little more savvy about when I need to call in from the road about saying, you know, what mile marker I'm at or that kind of thing. What's the best way to identify where you are, because there aren't mile markers, and also should you, because everybody's got a phone, should you take some photographs?
Oh, yes, please. Yeah, those are all great things to do. So what we need to know is where and when. So, there aren't mile markers along the shoreline, but typically people can say, you know, they're parked in such and such a place, or they're in this bay or near this river outlet. So use your best guess about how to give us geographic information. Let us know what you observed. Take some photos. And in fact, if you have an empty water bottle and you can grab a sample, let Wisconsin DNR know about that, and it could be that it's something we'll want to take a look at.
Oh, fantastic. So citizen science in action, but just don't invite your dog to wade out there and get a sample with you, because you know how they are. You know, if it's nasty, they want to put it in their mouths.
It was true in the 2018 bloom that I mentioned, where the water was really thick green. There were many, many people and dogs out there splashing around. So we'd like to not see that. The healthy thing is to stay out of that water.
Bob, I'm curious. We have to rely on anecdotal information. I realize, and that's really tricky for scientists. But have you begun to do a deep dive into anecdotal information about algae blooms? I'm thinking Larry Weber's always mentioning, and you can find a lot of references to it, the summer of 1936, where the heat just went wild. And we had that entire week, I think, where he said the temperature didn't dip below 100. And that was when they were taking temperatures down by the lake. Have you been able to look into letters and historical information to see if you can maybe get a sense of previous algal blooms?
Great thought. We've looked at what we can. I took a note to look back at the 1936 event because that hasn't been on my radar screen till now. The anecdotal information that we have so far go back to 2012, and there were press releases then. There are a few written accounts, or people have kind of let me know verbally about events of quote-unquote green water previously in Lake Superior. There was some indication of green water actually along the North Shore back in kind of the bad old days of reserve mining and untreated sewage. But nothing, you mentioned anecdotal, they really don't amount to anything more solid than just that. So green water can mean so many things. It's really not a solid data point for us. So we think these are new things to happen in Lake Superior, at least in recent years. That's a very difficult thing to prove. We have some means at our disposal to look at the environmental history in lakes through coring, and we'll be doing some of that in the coming couple of years. The near shore Lake Superior is a tricky place to do that because you mentioned it's really high energy and water's sloshing around a lot. Not the best place to record a historic record. But we also will be looking at least one of the nearby smaller inland lakes that's right next to Lake Superior. So if we can find some record of the environmental history of a small lake right next to Lake Superior, that probably will be meaningful information for us to understand the history of these things.
Fascinating, because you have to figure, obviously, that if there something significant showed up there, it was probably happening half a mile away on Lake Superior. So interesting. Well, Bob, I hope we have the opportunity to talk to you about this again. Thank you so very much for joining us this morning. And it was really a treat to have you on the line. Thanks again.
My pleasure.
Bob Sterner is the director of the Large Lakes Observatory at UMD. And if you see algal blooms on Lake Superior, in particular on the South Shore, we'll get some information up so it'll be easy for you to find. But they're asking that you report the blooms to the local DNR, Minnesota and or Wisconsin, or Wisconsin and or Minnesota. Take some photos, note down where and when, and if you can get a sample, and maybe contribute that. That could be helpful also. Again, we'll get some information up on our website so it will be easy for folks to get more information. Green Visions on KUMD is made possible with support from Heritage Window and Door, the Duluth Superior supplier for renewal by Anderson Windows and Doors, and from the Minnesota Power Energy Conservation Program, making progress toward a lower carbon energy future.